sunshiny day. You can have a bad accident on a bright and sunshiny day. Don't put the blame on today. Just say you didn't yield the right of way. You didn't even write a thing.
Yes, sir, and there you have the Bearcat Crawl, played for you by one of the Boogie Woogies.
Hey, look how cheap this one is.
That's a counterfeit.
So what?
So what? Your skin lotion could have something scary in it, like antifreeze or other poisons. It could even be urine and mouse droppings you're rubbing all over your skin, and you wouldn't even know it.
No way. That's creepy and sick.
Yeah, that's why we need to know what's in...
From New York, Rock Raider.
Yeah, yeah, 1-2, Total Eclipse.
From Executioners, and we chilling on WRCT.
Word up, Pittsburgh representing 88.3 FM.
Check it out,
dial. Aight, peace.
All right, let's start today with another bizarre step that anti-vaxxers are willing to take despite not wanting to just go and get the vaccine, which is a known quantity. There are now people snorting and gargling iodine, presumably to fight COVID-19. This is a really bad idea. And as is the case with many of these things, I have no problem telling you what the kernel of a scientific basis is for where this came from. And I'll tell you that in a moment. Here's an article from Men's Health, which says, iodine was once a popular treatment for your typical cut and scratch. And now anti-vax circles are claiming that gargling or snorting it works as a preventive for COVID-19. Povidone iodine, known commercially as betadine, is typically used on the skin as a first aid treatment or a disinfectant for surgery prep. Remember, in school, you would get a cut, you'd go to the nurse's office, they would put that iodine, yellow, the yellow stuff on it. It would sting and, you know, and then you would go back to class. Typically, the brand has also introduced a 0.5% mouth rinse meant to treat a mild sore throat. not to prevent COVID. On September 8th, a Twitter user claiming to be an ER doctor tweeted, and we will show you the tweet, "Don't get COVID. Prophylaxis is not that hard. Also, nasal spray with a couple of drops betadine in it and gargle with original Listerine." So you see here, there are a bunch of things in the picture, which I will describe. There's vitamin C. There's melatonin. There is, I don't know what that thing in the middle is, zinc, vitamin D, and then adds nasal spray with betadine and gargle with original Listerine. Unfortunately, this is a disinfectant, as William Schaffner, doctor, professor of preventive medicine at Vanderbilt, says. Its use has slowed down because even on scratches and cuts, its effectiveness has been debated. There's no data this would be effective for COVID. Avrio Health, the makers of betadine, has also intervened in online conversations, saying betadine antiseptic sore throat gargle is only for temporary relief of occasional sore throat. It has not been demonstrated to be effective for the treatment or prevention of COVID-19 or other viruses. So there's a few things to talk about here. First of all, there are some studies that have been done which say that if you use, and it's very speculative data, but if you use, let me see how the right way to apply this is. In a petri dish, if you use something like an iodine solution, it seems to reduce the viral level of viral particles. But again, this is based on in vitro studies and only for a little bit of time. So most optimistically, what we could say right now would be, if you put some of this stuff in your throat and you have some virus particles in your throat, but really the virus is in the lungs, right? It's possible that in some brief sense, it would reduce the number of viral particles in the mouth and throat. But because it's in the lungs, if the infection is in the lungs, then within a very short time, those viral particles are going to reappear in the throat. What's going on here is that it's very similar to what happened with hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. Iodine is just around. It's cheap, okay? It's widely available everywhere. So much like with hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin, it's logical that we would say, does any of the cheap stuff we already have and that's plentiful work for COVID? And sometimes you'll stumble across a false efficacy signal, as we saw early with hydroxychloroquine. You might stumble across some in vitro study or something like that. You know, the new thing when I go to my dentist's office is they have me rinse with something, and all it, you know, my dentist says, it seems as though just at a very micro level, it's possible this might kill some virus particles in your throat right now. But if you're infected and it's in the lungs and you're breathing it, the throat and the mouth are going to refill with it very, very quickly. So the big picture story here is, how are people that are insanely skeptical of things from verified sources about known quantities like the vaccine willing to accept what random people on Twitter say and just going and doing it? That's a real problem. That's a real crisis. And it's a crisis of education. It's a crisis of media literacy. But in the meantime, don't snort and or gargle iodine solution. Not something you want to be doing. I want to follow up about this bigger story through COVID that we're seeing of conservative radio hosts, anti-mask advocate radio hosts, anti-vax radio hosts dying of COVID after bashing vaccines. Business Insider now reports at least seven conservative radio hosts and high-profile anti-mask, anti-vax advocates have died from COVID in recent weeks. Radio hosts Bob Enyart, Dick Farrell, Phil Valentine, and Mark Bernier, as well as former CIA officer and conspiracy theorist Robert David Steele, anti-masker Caleb Wallace, and South Carolina Republican conservative leader Presley Stutz, shared conspiracy theories about vaccines before catching COVID. They told supporters misinformation about the virus. They held rallies in opposition to mask mandates. As COVID cases continue to surge, nearly all of the deaths are among the unvaccinated, and misinformation remains widespread. Remember all of these stories. We talked about Bob Enyart, refused to get vaccinated before dying of COVID. He had a show called Real Science Radio. He died Monday. Dick Farrell from Florida, radio host, advocated against the vaccine on Facebook before his death. Said the vaccines were bogus. Said Fauci was a power-tripping, lying freak. He died of COVID. Phil Valentine, we covered extensively, who actually became a vaccine advocate after being hospitalized. He didn't make it. Phil Valentine died. Mark Bernier, we covered, another Florida right-wing radio host, said on air he was against vaccines. I'm not taking it. Are you kidding me? Mr. Anti-vax jeepers. He died of COVID. Former CIA officer Robert David Steele spread COVID denial conspiracies throughout the pandemic. He died from COVID over the, it looks like, the last weekend in August. This is not fun. It's not funny. It's sad. And it's happening to people that listen to these folks as well. Caleb Wallace, anti-masker who protested COVID safety measures, spent a month in the hospital, only 30 years old, and died, called COVID tyranny, called lockdowns and masks COVID tyranny. By the way, another important detail, he started showing symptoms in July and treated himself with ivermectin, vitamin C, zinc, aspirin, and an inhaler. None of those things shown to actually work for COVID. Presley Stutz, 64-year-old South Carolina conservative group leader, died after making fun of masks. Chair of the Greenville Tea Party, made false statements about the virus, downplayed the importance of mask wearing. So listen, in terms of hierarchy and reach and audience, these are relatively low-level radio people, right? I mean, they seem to have been true believers. They've now paid a price. The larger audience people, you know, Hannity, Tucker, Laura Ingraham, Glenn Beck, people like that, they strike me more as being con artists. I think particularly given the revelations that Fox News's vaccination and testing program is even stricter than the one outlined by Joe Biden. And yet Tucker and Laura, they keep working there. My sense is that the Fox people aren't really true believers. They are grifters. These guys really seemed to be true believers. And you even saw them change, some of them, like Phil Valentine, when it started getting really, really bad. Unfortunately, even these deaths may not convince people of stuff. If you go on the right-wing enclaves online, you will see people writing, these guys were murdered because they spoke out against the vaccine. It's an unfalsifiable claim, right? Well, it looks like if you're unvaccinated, you're more at risk. And look, now these people died. No, 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 no. They were killed, the conspiracy goes, because they spoke out against the vaccine. There is no convincing a lot of these people. But hopefully, these deaths are not completely in vain. They are senseless, but they are hopefully not completely in vain in that some people will have been convinced to get vaccinated as a result. I don't know if that's the case. Let me know your thoughts. You can find me on Twitter at DPacman. Welcome back to the show. Remember that we are primarily funded by individual members through the David Pakman Show membership program. You can sign up. Really, you. It's not other people. I'm really talking to you. You can sign up at joinpakman.com. You can use the coupon code BETTER21 to get a discount off of the membership. And of course, you will get instant access to the bonus show, access to commercial-free audio and video streams of The David Pakman Show, and so many other great things. Let's hear from people in the audience. It's a novel concept, I know, but let's hear from people in the audience. We do this via Discord. You can find the Discord at davidpakman.com/Discord, conveniently enough. Let's start today with Tom from New Jersey. Tom, you are on the air. What's on your mind?
Hey, David, can you hear me?
I can.
Hey, this is my first time calling. I've been listening to you since 2016. So
thank you.
I just started a new semester, which is my first time in person in a classroom in 2 years.
Yep.
Yesterday, I had a professor tell us about for an hour why she was vaccine hesitant. And she was talking about how the CDC said people who had COVID shouldn't get the vaccine. My question is, like, what should we do about, like, people who are professionals
yep.
who are telling, like, students and such they shouldn't get the vaccine?
Beautiful. So, first of all, what she is saying is untrue. CDC has not told people who have been sick with COVID not to get the vaccine. I do believe there at one point was a requirement that you wait some number of days after recovering before getting the vaccine. But I am not aware of anything about if you've had COVID, don't get vaccinated. That's number one. Number two, what type of class is this? What's the subject matter of the class?
You'll never believe, but it's a health psychology class.
Okay. So it is not a class on epidemiology, and it doesn't seem like the woman or virology. It doesn't seem that the professor's views on vaccination are relevant. So what I would do is I would go to the department chair. I would go to the provost. I would let everybody know. Is this an undergraduate class?
Yeah.
Director of undergraduate studies, whatever. I would let everybody know. I am filing a complaint because the teacher in a health psychology class spent an hour ranting about her vaccine hesitancy, including spreading, incorrect statements, contradictory to the CDC. I would just report it and let the university handle it.
All right. Thanks, Pac-Man. I was incredibly frustrated yesterday listening to that.
It's horrible. It's absolutely crazy. And it's probably happening at a lot of different places is the reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think you'll do it? You'll report it?
Yeah, I'm planning to.
Okay, good. Please follow. Let us know what happens, okay?
All right, thank you. I'll call back.
Thank you. Tom from New Jersey. Let's get that going. We've got to deal with that. That just can't be allowed. It's a real problem. All right, let's go next to Miguel from El Paso, Texas. Miguel, you're on the air.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, perfect. Hi, David. So I had a question. I have two questions, in fact. I wanted to know whether you'd be interested in interviewing someone from or reaching out to the Sunrise Movement. Do you know about the Sunrise Movement?
I'm familiar with I remember the name of the organization. Are they sort of a like releasing public records and documents about things type group?
Not really. They're an organized movement made up of young individuals like me who do activism for mostly environmental causes.
Okay.
So they have plenty of chapters like all around the United States, and their main goal is to spread like the basis of the Green New Deal not just in a national white sense, but also like in local, in their local chapters, see what they can
Got
do
it.
To bring Green New Deal proposals to local
areas. That it sounds like great work. As an interview on the show, it would be what we call a dud. Unfortunately, those types of interviews don't do well. They'll get 2,000 views and people will write to me and say, David, that really was not a good interview for the show. So I love what you're describing that the organization is doing. I'm not going to, kind of blow smoke, though. It's probably not an interview for this particular show.
That's okay. I understand. I was just thinking like, there's plenty of people out there, young people like me who want to do something about climate change, and they don't know exactly where to go. And, maybe an interview with a representative or someone of that rapport could, bring light to that. Maybe they can go somewhere that, they can make some change. But that's okay. I understand fully if it's your show, you do what's best for you.
Good.
My second question is not as serious. Given that you're a native from Argentina, am I correct in that assessment?
That's an absolutely correct assessment, yeah.
Okay, perfect. So I wanted to know what your opinion is on a famous popular band, Soda Stereo.
Love them.
Love them?
Yeah.
Do you have a Do you have a favorite record that you would recommend as a beginner, or are
no?
You just,
no, I don't. I'm not familiar enough with the discography to be able to recommend specific records. But no. Right before the pandemic, I went to a Soda Stereo cover band, great band of many great Argentinian bands.
All right, perfect. I was just curious about that. Thank you so much, David. I really appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Very much appreciate the call. Very nice guy. Great to hear from people. Let's go next to, let's try Fred from Germany. Fred from Germany, you're on the air.
Hello, can you hear me, David?
Yes, I can.
Oh, great. I'm a big fan of your show. I've been, I'm a little nervous, but I've been a listener for about a year.
Oh, great.
I want to ask a question about I have an economic question. And you talked a lot about the debt and deficit.
Yes.
And I'd like to know, you just interviewed someone who wrote a book about a post-growth economy. And my question about that would be, if you are in favor of sort of post-capitalist, post-growth ideas, and I don't say that you are, that's like a general you, shouldn't you be worried about debt and deficit in the way that if you're increasing the debt or the deficit in too high magnitude, you're sort of creating a need for more economic growth, because if the debt grows much faster than the economy, then that's bad, right?
Yeah. So this really would be a question for someone who is actually like a post-growther, because that I don't know that I'm a post-growther. I think there is obviously some physical limit to the resources of the planet, and at some point that will become a factor. But there's really two points of view on your question, right? One is, well, if we want to go to post-growth, part of the reason we need growth is because we continually have more debt. So we need the growth in order to pay for the debt. That would be one view. So that would be the more debt there is, the longer we're locked into needing the growth. That's one view. But there's another view as well. And the other view would be, if eventually this is all a house of cards that will implode because we will reach the limit of resources for the country, for the planet rather, then financial ledgers on which we have debt are sort of irrelevant. Either we get to a point where it doesn't matter, or the planet collapses, and therefore who cares about debt and deficit? So I don't, you know, it would be more of a question for somebody who's really an ideologue in that, I don't say it in a negative way, but an ideologist in that space. But it seems to me you could really make the argument on both sides of that question.
Okay. Thanks for your answer. And thank you for answering my question.
My pleasure. Thanks, Fred. All right. Fred from Germany. Very specific question. I like it. Let's go next to Frumpus from Chicago. Frumpus, you are on the air.
Hold on, David.
Oh, take your time.
All right. Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay. So I've been having conversations.
Oh, and you're cutting out already. So we had the first cutout. So let's see if we can get to the let's see if you can start over. You cut out. You're having conversations.
Okay. Yeah, I've been having conversations with like some cynical Republicans about this talk about Democrats want to raise taxes on the rich and all this.
Mm-hmm.
And the cynicism comes from these Republicans will respond to me and say, well, why would these politicians vote to raise taxes on themselves? And I kind of struggle to respond to that, because I'm sure there's examples of times they've done it in the past. But I just don't know how to respond to that type of cynical attitude towards these bills.
So there's a couple different things. First of all, the taxes. So let's see how to break this down in pieces. First of all, the tax increases that are being proposed are actually for people whose salaries are higher than that of most of our elected officials. You know, members of the House and Senate make $175,000 a year. I think if you're in leadership, it's more like $215,000 or something like that. Biden is talking about this is going to hit people making over $450,000 as a couple or $400,000 individually or whatever the case may be. Now, the counter might be, well, a lot of these people have more income than that because they also have whatever business they had before entering the House or Senate, or they have a spouse, like Nancy Pelosi's spouse makes a lot of money, all of this sort of stuff. So the first part is, it's not always the case that these things would hit them, number one. Number two, why would an elected official do something that doesn't benefit them financially? Well, if they actually cared more about what was good for the country and what their constituents want, it is, after all, representative democracy. We don't elect these people to do what's good for them. We elect them to do what's good for us and to represent our views. So it's an insanely, it's not even cynical, but it's the whole point here is they're being elected to do the will of the people. That's why they might pass a bill that would increase their own taxes. And if they're not willing to do it, they should be removed from their positions.
Right, I agree. And then just one more comment on that thing that you the raising taxes bill that you just referenced. Do you know if that includes like investment income and capital gains and such or no?
My understanding is that it is talking about earned income like wages. So when it talks about $5 million earners or whatever, my understanding is that's not talking about capital gains. A little bit of the problem, honestly, Frumpus, is that a lot of this stuff has not yet, we've not yet seen like pen to paper and exactly the way it's all going to work. It's just kind of bullet points. And that's why I'm keeping my analysis macroeconomic in general until we actually know exactly how all these things are going to be set up.
Okay, David, thank you for your comments. Take care.
My pleasure. All right, Frumpus from Chicago, very much appreciate that. Let's speak next to Zach from Toronto, Canada. Zach, you're on the air.
Hey, David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I was curious because I saw a video on you talking about socialism. I was curious of your reasoning of why you think the means of production should be privately owned rather than publicly owned.
Well, I approach it a different way. My approach would be, why would the means of production, which might be built by an individual, paid for by an individual, insured by an individual, financed by an individual, why should ownership be taken away and either made societal or, in a communistic sense, state-owned? Why would we do that? What would be the justification from taking it away from the individual that built it?
Huh, okay. I guess I never thought about it from, like, the latter perspective.
Well, I mean, apply it to anything, right? So you're sort of like, for me, the action that would be required to be justified would be, why would we be allowed to change the ownership structure of something that someone built? If you go to school and you learn plumbing, for example, and then you go and you buy all the plumbing equipment, you might take out a loan to buy that plumbing equipment, and you're a plumber for a bunch of time. And then at a certain point, you get big enough where you start hiring apprentice plumbers and all these different things. So it's your business. You own the equipment. You hire the employees. What would be the justification for saying, OK, now the business is no longer yours. Now it belongs to all of your employees, or it belongs to the state. What would be the justification for that?
I'm not sure, actually. I'm personally not a socialist, but I'm interested in socialist theory. And I was curious of why you personally weren't a socialist. But I mean, that
Yeah.
That does make sense.
So I have a ton, more broadly, I have a ton of videos about why I'm not a socialist. But to answer that specific question, it's because I don't think there's any justification for it.
Okay, great. Thanks, David. I appreciate hearing your perspective.
I appreciate the question. Thank you so much for calling in. Let's go next to Jake from Chicago. Jake from Chicago, you're on the air. Jake from Chicago, you are on the air.
Oh, hello. Can you hear me, David?
Yes, I can.
Hey, David. I'm a longtime listener.
Thank you.
I'm currently a student at the University of Alabama, and one recent trend among these Southern college football games has been the F Joe Biden chants. Hearing these lunatics completely make ironic keep politics out of sports and then feel the need to disrupt the environment of the game, how do we approach dealing with these kinds of people?
Well, approach in what sense? You mean what should be done at the game when the chant breaks out, or more generally?
Just in general speaking, like, how can we just, like, change it so that these people aren't completely hypocritical with what they say?
I'm not aware of any way to start. The hypocrisy has actually, we've been covering the hypocrisy for more than a decade on the show, and the hypocrisy has only gotten worse and worse. My body, my choice, when it comes to the vaccine, but not when it comes to abortion. No, debt and deficit are bad, except when it's a Republican president. Don't regulate businesses, except when they want to require vaccination. So I think it's a lost cause on the hypocrisy. I think we've just got to figure out a way to not be annoyed with them. And I've been reading about the chants at the football games. It's like, wow, big surprise. A football audience in the south of the United States doesn't like Joe Biden. It's got, to me, it's kind of like, it's not really big news, you know?
Yeah, I remember when 2 years ago when Trump came to the Alabama versus LSU game, I've never heard a louder stadium in my life. It was just crazy. These people going absolutely nuts for this man.
Yep. Well, that is the South, and they tend to vote Republican. Yeah. So not really surprising. But, you know, quite frankly, I'd be avoiding large sporting events at this point in time. And then I'm both skipping the COVID risk as well as the anti-Biden chance.
Yeah, that's fair. I enjoy going to games, but I'm also masked up at the game, so I'm trying everything I can to mitigate, but I completely understand about not going.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well.
How many other are people tending to wear masks? It's not
Nobody has masks on there. Our school does have a mask mandate,
yep.
But in outdoor areas, people don't really follow it as much.
Right. Okay, yeah. And in outdoor it is less important, I would agree. All right, well, stay safe down there, Jake.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
There is Jake. Let's take a quick break. If you're holding to talk to me, don't hang up because we're going right back to the phones momentarily. All right, let's hear from a few more of you in the audience. We take calls these days via Discord. You can find the David Pakman Show Discord at davidpakman.com/Discord. Let's go next to Ashley from Florida. Ashley, you were on the air.
Hi, David. I'm a big fan of yours. I listen to you all the time.
Thank you.
And thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
I am in Florida, and right now what we're dealing with are no masks in schools. We have people fighting against CRT.
Mm-hmm.
I recently went to one of our school board meetings trying to advocate for masks in schools. The state has not taken funding or education for virtual options from the federal government.
Right.
So I feel really out of luck with my kids. I'm just wondering, with the recent events with the Proud Boys being at the meetings in California yesterday, well, not the meetings, but the...
at the Newsom rally, yeah.
Yeah. They're also here in our schools and in our board meetings. And I was
let me see if I can understand that, Ashley. These are parents who are also Proud Boys, or these are just random Proud Boys going to the school board meetings to complain about masks?
There are parents that are Proud Boys.
Oh, wow. There are parents that are Proud Boys in the school district.
Yes.
And are they making a big commotion at the meetings?
No, there were a lot of police at the one we were at, which I know it seems like sometimes they're one and the same, but because I think of the extra police presence they had, there wasn't a fight. But the county north of me in Lee, they had a fight recently. You did a story on them.
Yeah. Listen, I don't know. I'm going to be really honest. I was just talking to friends who have kids right now recently, and I was saying, if throughout this pandemic I had had children and had to figure out daycare, schooling, they can't be vaccinated, some places don't want them to wear masks, I don't know what I would have done. It seems impossibly difficult. Like, I just can't even imagine. It's one of the worst aspects of this pandemic. Does it occur to you to pull the kids from school? Is that even possible? Not that I'm recommending it. Not that I'm recommending it.
Yeah, I have pulled from school, but there's some parents who, even if they wanted to, they can't because there's no funding. The state refused federal funding for virtual options, so they didn't really give parents a choice on this end of things.
Right, and some people are saying, I'm going to homeschool, but that's, number one, arguably not so good socially for the kids, and number two, a lot of parents work, so they can't be homeschooling.
Right. And I think everybody deserves to be able to have a public education and be safe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No, I can't even imagine. It's I mean, what's the hope? Just that we eventually get past the pandemic? I mean, is there really any solution while the pandemic is going on? It seems like it's becoming a lost cause in some of these counties.
I know. That's why I was calling you.
Yeah.
To see if you had any answers.
Do you have it? I'm like, is there any action you're thinking of taking? Let me put it that way.
Yeah, we're trying to organize, but I think we're really outnumbered here.
Mm.
It's difficult.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, Ashley, I wish I had specific advice for you. I don't, because it's a tough situation, but we're with you, and keep us posted about what goes on down there.
Okay. Thanks, David.
All right. Thanks, Ashley. Ashley from Florida. Not a good situation, guys. Not a good situation at all. Let's speak next to Emily. Emily, you are on the air. And Emily disappeared. Let's go next to Justin from New York. Justin, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, can you hear me? Or it's...
Yes, I can.
Okay. Hey, David, how are you? First time caller, long time listener.
Thank you.
No problem. I have a question though. Like, because I always ask is that, like, I have like friends that are anti-mask and anti-vax and everything. I also have friends that are pro-vaccination. But what I always ask, never really get a good answer for, is that, like, what's the end goal? Like, because if you're not gonna get the vaccination, you're probably gonna get COVID. So, is your end goal just to get COVID and survive, gamble with that?
Yeah, that's it. That's basically their view. I mean, have you asked them? What do they say when you ask them?
They say like, oh, I have an immune system, or oh, I'm scared of the shot. And I got the Johnson one, and like that, it hurt. Yeah, but thing is though, it's like, it's just something you like. I don't know if you have any like I don't want to censor, like, quit being, you know, a B word about it and just take it.
Yeah. When people, I have a question. When you say that you got the vaccine and it hurt, are you talking about the moment they inject you, it hurts, like the little prick from the needle hurts? Or are you talking about like later you had arm pain or whatever?
Yeah, both, you know, like the moment it's a shock, but you're fine. But then after that, like, I had arm pain and I had two fevers, but after the vaccination, but after that, like, after that done day, I was just fine. I was just like, my arm was sore for like,
yeah, like, I get that there's a fear of needles, and that's a specific thing. But when people say getting the shot hurts, I mean, it's literally 1 second. They put the shot in. Is maybe it's 3 seconds. That part I don't get. Like, I get the fear of needles that some people have. That's a widely known thing. I get not wanting to feel sick for a few hours or a day or two or whatever flu like. But the actual pain of the shot, I don't get, because it's under 5 seconds. You know, it's, that part is strange to me, that would make someone not get vaccinated.
Yeah, and not only that, but my second question is that, like you have, like, I think you probably have like this question asked many times, that I don't want to repeat it, but you'll have like Republicans were like elected Republicans were against the vaccine mandate or against like any measures to like really like even mask mandate measures to mitigate the spread of the virus. Is it do you think it would be a good political strategy for the Democrats to say these people like Ron DeSantis are like pro COVID? They're against every measure to mitigate COVID, so they're pro-COVID. They want COVID to win.
We've talked about that a little bit before. I mean, maybe, you know, it's really a rhetorical trick to say that some of these people are pro-COVID. I don't think it'll really catch on very much, but sometimes I'll say it. It's like some of these people are some of the biggest supporters of the virus that I've ever seen. I don't know that it's going to be any big kind of game changer in terms of getting people to take things seriously, but you're right. It's almost like, are they trying to spread the virus via their policy? But I don't think it'll make a big difference to adopt that as a rhetorical trick.
All right. Well, that's pretty much all I have for today.
All right. I appreciate the call. Thank you so much. Great to hear from you. Some great, great calls this week. Why don't we go next to Christian from California? Christian, you're on the air.
Hi, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
So I was wondering, with the big kerfuffle made this week from Joe Manchin coming out and saying he will not vote for the $3.5 trillion infrastructure bill.
Yeah.
Do you think Manchin overall is sort of bad optics for Senate Democrats?
Well, yeah. I mean, so the complicated thing is, like, of course he is. But remember that almost certainly if Manchin is replaced in Virginia, it's with a Republican. So he does vote with Democrats on a lot of things. And it gets us back to this age old question of, OK, you primary him and he loses, but then you almost certainly end up with a Republican. So, yeah, I can't stand the guy. We predicted he was all of a sudden going to be front and center in a lot of these policy decisions. But then you also have to understand the practicality of West Virginia and who's likely to replace Manchin. And it's most likely going to be a Republican who supports what Democrats want to do even less. The solution is less about remove Manchin, because that probably means a Republican replaces him. It's we've got to win more seats back in other states.
And also in hand with that, I think we should, you know, work on moving, you know, Manchin's constituents to the left so that,
absolutely,
you know, he's forced to vote in a way that, you know, reflects the will of them.
I would say, let's try to figure out a way for there to be political consequences for Manchin from being obstinate.
Do you think, because I do tend to agree with you that if you ran a progressive type, like AOC candidate in West Virginia, that seat would probably just go to a Republican.
Right.
But I mean, do you think that has more to do with the right's framing of progressive type Democrats? Or I don't see how, you know, Manchin, if he were to come out aggressively for this $3.5 trillion bill, how that in any way would harm him in West Virginia,
no,
you know?
I completely, I on this particular bill, I totally agree with you. I think it's less about, you know, I do think that, I mean, the problem would be if AOC beats Manchin in a primary, AOC loses in the general. So it's really problems that would exist in the general. I do think it's possible for a sort of working class type guy. Like, for example, Tim Ryan from Ohio, who's a member of Congress. He's quite left, but he has kind of like the working class, middle class creds with regard to his whole approach. That's the type of guy that if he were to primary, and he doesn't live in West Virginia, and this is just a hypothetical, Tim Ryan's someone I could see maybe winning an election in West Virginia at the state Senate level, but I'm not even sure. It's a tough question. It's a tough one.
Yeah, it is. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time, David. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Appreciate it. Yeah, thank you so much for the call. It's a good question. Important to understand the dynamics there. I mean, very, very important. All right. Let's speak next to Paul from C. It says CUU. What is CUU, Paul? Is that a university?
No, it's my airport signing. You know, the three letters that they give you at the city airport.
At which airport? Which airport is this?
Chihuahua, Mexico.
Mexico. Oh, Chihuahua, Mexico. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Very good. All right. Well, what's going on, Paul?
Yeah. I missed the call the other day. I was in Discord and I missed the call.
Well, I'm glad you're back.
I don't know. I mean, if I had a specific question, it would be like, my mom got vaccinated in the U.S.
Okay.
She's over there right now. But she took a flight like three weeks ago. She has her vaccination card and all that stuff. But they still require a COVID test. She thought once she was vaccinated, at the airport, she would be asked to show her vaccination card.
Hold on a second. Let's back up, Paul. Can we back up one second, Paul?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
when she came to the United States, she was not yet vaccinated. Is that correct?
Okay. Yeah. She went twice. She went in like March, April, something like that. She got vaccinated. She got back and she went back.
Okay. I got it. Yeah.
Again.
The U.S. requires a negative test to come in. This is for Americans and foreigners. I just came back from Spain. I'm vaccinated. I needed a negative test to come to the U.S. So that applies to everybody right now.
And it's crazy because I can go to the U.S. and get vaccinated. And I got thinking about this, like, when they were talking about the fake vaccination cards, you covered it, Tucker Carlson talked about it.
Yeah.
Do you think it's affecting the numbers now that the false vaccination cards and now foreigners going there to get vaccinated? Like, do you think that throws off, like, the charts of how many Americans have been vaccinated?
I think it throws it off slightly, but I don't think it's enough of to make any significant difference. You have to remember, every 1% of the U.S. is 3.3 million people. So half a percent is 1.65 million people, and a quarter of a percent represents 800,000 people. So the number of people that would have to do it to really make any substantive difference is huge. So you're right. On some level, it throws it off. But I think we have a pretty good sense of how many Americans have been vaccinated.
OK, yeah, I just have like one last question, if I can.
Sure.
Like if they pass an infrastructure plan,
mm-hmm.
and it goes through these red areas when people don't want to leave the work they do for the coal company or fracking company or something like that to go join the clean energy. Do you think the U.S. will be open to hiring foreign people?
Oh, you're saying if in red states, like a lot of the people don't want to go and get jobs for green energy, will the companies look to foreign workers?
Yeah, you think you can get a work visa?
Oh, you would have to talk to an immigrant. I have no idea, but I can tell you for sure that if companies have trouble finding people, they will go wherever they need to in order to find people to do work. That's for sure.
Do you think they're going to find resistance with people not wanting the good paying jobs?
No. I think 99% of these right wingers who love oil, if the job opportunity is to be a solar panel installer and it pays $25 an hour, I think they're going to go and get the job. I think it's that simple.
Well, I think. Well, thank you, David.
Okay, thanks, Paul. Great to hear from you, Paul, from Chihuahua, Mexico. That does it for calls today. I'll speak to everybody again very soon. All right, let's get right into your emails. You can email us info@davidpakman.com. Every Friday, we take a look through the mailbag, so to speak. It's really more of an internet folder, but it still seems like we call it a mailbag. I don't know why. It doesn't make any sense. And emails of all sorts are featured. You can email info@davidpakman.com with your thoughts about the show, politics, questions, whatever the case may be. So many meaty and substantive emails this week. Let's start one email from one of our viewers who is a neurologist making a very important point. Last week, you had a caller that mentioned nurses talking about how the COVID vaccine might cause individuals to misinterpret their symptoms. It seems this discussion of the nurses might be a misinterpretation of an actual report. There is a report that there are, quote, functional neurological disorders after the vaccine. I am a neurologist. Functional neurological disorder is the medical term for what used to be called psychogenic symptoms. In other words, folks are reporting symptoms that are not of medical origin after their vaccines. Below is a summary of the report from Medscape. Happy to interpret, but as a brief summary, there are a number of neurological examination tricks that neurologists use to identify psychogenic versus neurological weakness. One of these is the Hoover sign mentioned below. Yeah, so this is a really important thing. A lot of the time, people will not understand the difference between a symptom and an actual physiological side effect of a medication. And for example, you can have a headache after a vaccine or after a medication or after working out or whatever. It's not that the headache isn't real, but there may not be a physiological cause for that, but it doesn't make the symptom any less real. And there's a lot of different terms that are sometimes applied here in different disciplines. Sometimes people talk about psychosomatic. We don't even need to go into that. As our viewer here is saying, we're talking about when we say functional neurological disorder, if you don't know what that means, you're like, whoa, that's the vaccine causes a functional neurological disorder. As is being pointed out, that means there's a symptom which we don't believe to actually be caused by something going on neurologically. And this applies in many other areas of medicine as well. Very important point, and you can read more about it if that's interesting to you. Next email comes from Cody. Cody says, hello, David. I'm having trouble dealing with the fact that some members of my family have stated they will never get the vaccine, especially my brother, who's a local business owner and comes into contact with a good deal of our community. I've presented them with the information on the vaccine, how it's FDA approved, how 99% of deaths and 97% of hospitalizations are from the unvaccinated, and info on mRNA vaccines, and nothing is getting through to them. I often get the rebuttal that it's my body, my choice. But when I explain it isn't just them they are affecting, it's everyone around them. Friends, family, and our community, they shrug it off and suggest those people should stay at home then. Do you have any suggestions on a different approach to this? I appreciate your time and enjoy your content. Keep up the good work. Listen, I am not pretending to have solutions here. Sometimes knowing someone who gets very sick or dies is the only thing that will change the minds of some of these people. Even then, sometimes that won't change their minds. So I don't have advice, sadly, other than advice for you, which is at a certain point, you might decide for your own sanity. This is a personal decision that you've had enough. And you're not going to try to convince them anymore, but maybe you decide you can't have them in your lives. That's not a suggestion. And I've not decided that with anybody. But you might reach a point where you say, this is too much. The stress of this is too much. And for safety and sanity, I'm opting out of this relationship. Or you might say, I'm just going to try to keep going because it's so important to me. Or you might try a different approach. I don't know. I wish I had an answer about what the right way to convince these people, what the most effective way would be to convince these folks. Next email today is from Michael. Michael says, hi, I watch the show from the UK most days, find them entertaining and informative. Nevertheless, I cringed. Oh, no. I cringed during an article when you repeatedly said a COVID number that had tripled had increased by 300%. Tripling means an increase of 200%, just as doubling would be a 100% increase. Careful with the maths and keep up the good work. I cringed when I realized I made this mathematical mistake. I make every effort to be accurate and precise with the audience. I appreciate the correction from Michael. And when I said the other day, COVID cases are up 300% and deaths are up 70%, 300% is a quadrupling, whereas the 70% increase in deaths is almost a doubling. Okay, apologies, and always appreciate the corrections. Sky wrote in. Sky says, David, my in-laws are both major Trump supporters, as well as deep into conspiracies. My husband and his mother regularly have debates and recently had one that took an interesting turn. They were talking about vaccines, and in his desperation to get her to see reason, he suggested that all the misinformation was a liberal conspiracy to eliminate all the anti-vax conservatives in order to win elections. He also posed the question of how many liberals have died due to COVID and asked her to name one. She could not. I found this strategy interesting and thought you might as well. Do we have to sink so low as to basically trick anti-vaxxers into getting the vaccine at this point? Would it be effective or damaging in the long term? I've talked about this before. I think that there would be, I don't know if we would call them scams. There would be things Joe Biden could say and do that would make the right go and get vaccinated. For example, imagine if Joe Biden announced, like, of course, he would never do it. It would never be legal. But imagine if Joe Biden announced, because of all of the things that these red state governors are doing, after October 1st, conservatives and Republicans will no longer be allowed to get the vaccine. It's like, it's so obviously impossible legally and logistically. Like, it would never happen. But the point is, I am convinced that if Trumpists, conservatives, Republicans, whoever is in the anti-vax group, if they came to believe that they were not going to be allowed to get the vaccine because of their political views, millions of them would run out and get the vaccine. There's no question about it. If a theory, hypothesis, rumor started to spread that the left doesn't want conservatives to get vaccinated so that they die, I think there is no doubt that if it was believed, that a ton of these right wingers would go out and try to get vaccinated. Now, is it damaging in the long term? Yeah. I mean, if Joe Biden did something like that, even if it worked, I do think in the long term it would be damaging because it would further foment the idea that the government is lying to you and you can't trust the government to do anything and on and on and on. So I'm not recommending it. I don't think it would be a good long term play, but it would sure as hell work with some of these some of these right wingers. So interesting that the conversation went that way. Spencer wrote to me. Spencer said, I am seeing studies suggesting that teenage boys are far more likely to suffer from myocarditis related to the vaccine than to end up in the hospital from COVID. Have you heard anything backing this claim up? I'm only able to find a few articles talking about it. Yeah, I read a study this morning about it. It's not true. In fact, there was a study that was going to look at myocarditis in teenage boys, and it had like a sample of 9 million vaccinated teenage boys, and like none of them got it. Or at least none of them got it badly enough to have to be hospitalized or something like that. No, the evidence I've seen is that the vaccine is safer than COVID at every age group, Very important, because there are some who will say if you are of a certain age, it actually makes less sense to get the vaccine. But from what I've seen is that at every age group, for just about every medical condition, you are better off with the vaccine and its possible side effects than you are getting COVID, big picture, statistically speaking. Lastly today, this one's a doozy, guys. This is from JJ. This stuff is constantly coming into my email. It's just dumping in all the time. Here is someone who has somehow ended up believing really incorrect things about COVID and vaccination. JJ says, David, sir. No, they didn't say sir. How about the adults unable to get the real vaccines? Also, the Delta virus thing, a complete lie. COVID sexed, when and how? No mutations right there, the proof needed. It's so sad that this is going on in our country. I don't know what else to say, you know. How about the adults unable to get the real vaccines? I think this is some allusion to fake vaccines. I don't know. The Delta virus thing is a complete lie. You know, we sequence the virus. We know what percentage of cases are Delta. We saw Mu peaked in July and then has come down. At some point, if someone's going to say this is an apple and you're going to say it's not an apple, it's a fake apple and it's imaginary. At some point, you can't convince them. COVID sexed? I don't know. Or do viruses have sex? I didn't think so. I don't. Maybe they do. I don't think it matters. Incoherent. And unfortunately, really, really unfortunately, a lot of people, I don't even know what that belief, I don't even know what they're saying, but I know a lot of people believe stuff like that because they email me all the time. We're going to have real trouble getting out of this pandemic if that type of stuff remains as prevalent as it is. We'll track whether vaccinations go up with the latest requirements and initiatives from Joe Biden. We will track all of it. We've got a great bonus show for you today. Please become a member. Really, folks, please become a member. Sign up at joinpacman.com. We do this show every day, but then we do an extra show called the bonus show every day, and you can get instant access to it if you become a member.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
WRCT Pittsburgh. We love monkeys.
Top dog in Pittsburgh. WRCT.
You listening in at your house? Are you listening in at your car? If you want to hear good music, you don't have to go far. 88.3 is the magic number. WRCT in at the Pittsburgh area. Who say so? I say so. Who is me? Maccabee Selassie.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Hello, this is Adam Clayton here, the bass player from U2. You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
RCT, in sound, from way out.
Hey, this is Marlon Saunders, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Hi there, this is MC Honky, and you're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
WRCT is on AOL Instant Messenger. Our screen name is WRCT883. Send us a shout out so we can make fun of your atrocious spelling. Send us a request. Send us anything. We're bored. WRCT, 88.3 FM on your radio, WRCT.org on the internet, and now WRCT883 on AOL Instant Messenger. In the language of the kids today, we're the bomb. That's right, isn't it? That's what the kids say.
Collins from Late Show with David Letterman, and you are listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
They put us under a bridge where we slept, and then we were taken to a jail in Texas. I spent 5 days in jail. Look what they gave us as a blanket to sleep on.
The U.S. is deporting hundreds of Haitian asylum seekers from a makeshift camp of 15,000 people under a bridge in Texas, despite protests from Haiti, which is facing a mounting humanitarian and political crisis following a devastating earthquake and the assassination of its president. We'll go to Del Rio, Texas, for the latest. Then we speak to an abortion provider in Texas over the state's near total ban on abortions. Over the weekend, one Texas doctor revealed he'd provided an abortion in open defiance of the law. Then we look at the deadly consequences of vaccine inequality.
More than 5.7 billion doses have been administered globally. But only 2% of those have been administered in Africa. This leaves people at high risk of disease and death, exposed to a deadly virus against which many other people around the world enjoy protection.
We go to India, where groups are calling on Johnson & Johnson to stop exporting Indian-made vaccines to wealthy nations, including the United States, at a time when hundreds of millions of people remain unvaccinated in India as well as in Africa. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Pentagon acknowledged Friday the U.S. drone strike that killed 10 civilians, including 7 children, in Afghanistan in the final days of the U.S. withdrawal was a tragic mistake. The Pentagon previously asserted the strike prevented an imminent threat by ISIS-K fighters, but investigations quickly revealed the victims were instead aid worker Zamari Ahmadi and his family members. His family is demanding a probe into the killing. This is his brother, Ramal Ahmadi.
They should accept and pay their damages. They should come to me and apologize and offer their condolences. They should pay blood money. We are innocent. They should evacuate us.
In Washington, D.C., lawmakers said they would investigate the deadly strike, while activists renewed calls for an end to U.S. drone warfare. In other news from Afghanistan, most secondary classes resumed without female students, as their fate remains unclear under the new Taliban leadership, who only explicitly ordered male students to return to the classroom. Some boys refused to attend class until all students were allowed to return. Meanwhile, the new Taliban mayor of Kabul told female municipal workers not to come to work. On Sunday, women activists rallied in front of the building which used to house the Ministry of Women's Affairs in Kabul, an agency the Taliban has done away with.
You cannot suppress the voice of Afghan women by keeping girls at home and restricting them, as well as by not allowing them to go to school. You cannot suppress the voice of Afghanistan's women by turning the Ministry of Women into a ministry of the promotion of virtue and prevention of vice. You cannot suppress Afghanistan's women.
Meanwhile, Al Jazeera reports at least 7 people were killed after a series of blasts in Kabul and the eastern city of Jalalabad Saturday. ISIS-K claimed responsibility for the attacks. The Biden administration sent 3 deportation flights to Haiti Sunday as part of its efforts to speed up the mass expulsion of over 14,000 Haitian asylum seekers who've been staying in a makeshift camp under a bridge in Del Rio, Texas, for days. The flights each carried at least 145 asylum seekers. More flights are expected to depart in the coming days. Haitian officials have urged the U.S. to stop.